We're effectively 11 days away from sine die in South Carolina. Where's the time gone? It flies when you're having fun. Tax cuts, tax credits, gambling, school choice. So much has gone on in this session, and yet there's still so much to accomplish. South Carolina goes to SCOTUS. No, it's not the name of a new movie. South Carolina did appear before the Supreme Court last week. Which leaders in South Carolina spoke out before or on the day of the arguments? And how did those arguments lay out? And what will be the impact of defunding Planned Parenthood? And we'll wrap up the show today by analyzing who is the new leader of the Democratic Party today on the Palmetto Family Matters Show. Welcome in. It is the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina. It's this one. It's the Palmetto Family Matters Show. Justin Hall, Randy Page here with you on Wednesday, April the 9th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. A long way from 2026, and yet, Randy, I feel like 2026 and the governor's race is already beginning to color the way we're governing in 2025.
Absolutely. I mean, everything that you talk about, and you know, like even last night when I was at the Citadel barbecue, the politics of the upcoming governor's race was very evident everywhere.
And of course, the national scope of that, I'll say, has already been playing out with Representative Nancy Mace taking a flamethrower to her perceived opponents, where she hasn't even announced where she's running yet.
Just a flamethrower?
I'll call it a flamethrower. Okay, I'll be nice and call it a flamethrower. Okay. It has gotten muddy. I'll say that. So that no one has officially announced they're running.
Correct.
Senator Josh Kimbrell of the upstate has said, I'm exploring the exploratory, as Tim Scott did with his presidential campaign. He then ran for president.
Right.
So you have a few names already. So you have the national side of it. But when it comes to the inner workings of the state house, and we've talked about this off air before, once the current governor, Henry McMaster, leaves the governor's mansion for the final time and a new person takes that role, it will be a significant change of the guard.
Absolutely.
It will be somebody who we would consider part of the new era of South Carolina politics. And that's whether it's Nancy Mace, Alan Wilson, Pamela Evett. I'm just mentioning names that I've read. I have no connections. Josh Kimbrell, Sean Bennett, you name them. And I'm assuming a House member or two will run.
Absolutely.
And who knows? If it's a Democratic candidate that wins it, things have happened. That would be a certainly big change of the guard. But all of this is working itself into the inner workings of the 2025 legislative session. We have spent a lot of time on a lot of different things. Tort reform. Don't know if you heard of it, but we spent a lot of time on tort reform.
Yes.
We've spent a lot of time on, this is just on the Senate side, energy.
Yes.
School choice.
Yes.
And let's get to school choice right now, because the Senate passed a bill, S-62. The House passed S-62, and by passed S-62, I mean that they took it to committee and they rewrote it, and then they passed that. And then
that is correct.
And then sent it back to the Senate. So it's not the same bill that the Senate moved out. Now, there are two options here. We can come to a compromise on the legislation now and pass it up and down vote both sides, or concur or non-concur, basically, or we can go to conference committee and we can get three from each side. We've talked about this on numerous occasions.
Right.
Prospects are looking good for S-62.
Yes, they are. I mean, I think that it's obvious that whether you're, you know, from the Senate side or from the House side, everyone wants to enact something with school choice. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, in talking with legislators even last night, you know, they want to move the ball down the field, and because obviously we've left, you know, a number of students kind of in limbo. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to fix that and then, you know, see what we do moving forward. But I was very encouraged to see Senate 62 pop up on the Senate calendar.
Right.
And that was, I think, Friday's calendar that it showed up at. And so the Senate is in perfunctory session this week. So obviously it won't hit anything this week. Mm-hmm. But looking forward to seeing, you know, what the Senate does and how it moves down the road. But feeling very optimistic from what I'm hearing out and about, you know, both the State House and just, you know, talking to politicos around the state.
So a lot's been going on. I want to get to one other thing here before we get to the tax cuts, because the tax cuts are a landmine.
Sure.
I might as well be talking about Dr. Simmer's nomination. We'll get to that in a second. not simmer, tax cuts. Let's talk about taxes in a different way. Tax credits. This did pass the Senate. This bill would allow a tax credit to be given to those who donate to crisis pregnancy centers in South Carolina.
Correct. Actually, it's a little bit broader than that. Mm-hmm. So in addition to pregnancy care centers, it would also help those organizations, nonprofits that help with both foster care and adoption agencies. So that is broader. It's based off of some bills that have been tried in other states across the nation and have been very successful. So Palmetto Family Alliance did testify in favor of Senate 32 when it was in front of the Senate Finance Committee.
Right. Now let's get to tax cuts. Yes. And I think that will color the conversation as we move it toward gambling. Economic uncertainty appears to be the topic du jour right now. That is it colored by what's happening federally with Donald Trump and President Trump and his tariff plan, which I have my opinions on that I will not elucidate on here. Shout out to Senator Danny Verdin for the elucidation.
Elucidate.
Tax cuts. Around the Southeast, we're seeing a renewed competitiveness on the state income tax level. Georgia and Kentucky are both looking at smaller income tax reductions paid for with extra revenue because, well, let's face it, Georgia and Kentucky are booming. They just are. Georgia itself as a state is just exploding in economic growth, and there are reasons for that. I think Georgia is positioned much like South Carolina, just South Carolina doesn't have the professional sports teams. Mississippi is eliminating its state income tax over the next decade. They're increasing the gas tax in Mississippi. Good. So that's how you're going to, again, when you talk about tax cuts, how are you going to generate that revenue without the income tax? Louisiana, their income tax cut is going to be based on a sales tax increase. So you're going to be paying more at the grocery store. You're going to be paying more at the restaurant. You're going to be paying more when you go buy goods because their sales tax is going to be higher, but you won't have to worry about an income tax as high. North Carolina, shout out Mitch Prosser, North Carolina's Democratic Governor Roy Cooper, he will not be governor for much longer.
No, he's not governor anymore. Yeah, Josh
Stein. That's right,
Stein.
Josh. That's right, Stein won. I forgot. Who'd he beat again? Never mind. So, the economic uncertainty, according to Josh Stein, they are pausing their income tax cuts in North Carolina. Oh, that leaves South Carolina. What's South Carolina going to do? Now, South Carolina, by and large, has the highest state income tax in the Southeast. No question. Some states in the Southeast, Florida, don't have one.
Tennessee.
Right. Those states don't have one. And they're booming more than Georgia is. South Carolina has a 6.25 state income tax rate. Well, House leadership, Senate leadership, and the governor of this state took to the second floor lobby and announced a plan to slash the state income tax to 3.99%. That's over 2% decrease. And you're saying 2%. That's a lot.
It's a lot.
That's a big slice of the pie. Problem, warning flags, flashing red signals. We then get reports coming out that says, you're going to be paying more
right
in 2026. And thus the infighting continues, right? We've talked about this inside the South Carolina House.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is a difficult time to be a state rep right now. There's a lot of infighting inside that chamber between leadership and those not in leadership. I think there you go. There's your pivot point. The problem is the reports show, the fiscal data shows that 60% of filers in 2026 in South Carolina will pay more in state income tax on this plan. Now, Representative Brandon Newton, who is a friend, said, well, that's short-term pain for long-term gain. Very similar to what President Trump, Randy, has said about the tariff issue.
Sure.
Don't be a panickin. That's what he said the other day. Yeah. I don't know what panickin means. He said, don't be a panickin.
Maybe it's Kofefe.
Kofefe, maybe. Yosemite. There is an idea there that you do have to squeeze the belt a little bit in order to make gains long term. I think that's in any case when you first set up a budget process for your family, you tighten the belt a little bit in order to create that breathing room down the stretch. It could be 6 months, it could be a year, but you'll create the breathing room. You just might have to live on rice and beans for a little bit. The problem is that doesn't sell to the South Carolina consumer right now or to the South Carolina taxpayer who's saying, no, I don't want to do that.
Right.
And I don't want to do that in a election year.
Absolutely not. I mean, it's really interesting to watch. And, you know, whether you look at, you know, the federal or the state level, you know, the reports are coming out, you know, that oil is selling for the cheapest that it's ever sold, you know, over the last 4 years. But yet gas still seems to be holding its own, which is interesting. And mm-hmm. then I, you know, consistently hear from my wife that carton of eggs is still $5.
Still expensive. My daughter loves eggs. I can tell you that it is expensive. Yes. She's 2 eggs a day. Yep.
So it's just, you know, really interesting to see, you know, how that happens. And obviously I think everyone knows that with a flat tax, there are going to be people who have to pay more. I mean, that's just a given because there are people that are not paying any income tax right now. I think the concern is, you know, is it something that we look at the deduction? You know, is the deduction too low so that it's having people, you know, responsible for tax at, you know, a really low rate versus, you know, increasing the deduction up, you know, for a married couple from $12,000 so that, you know, $12,001 starts the tax versus, you know, something different. And so, I think that between, you know, the fiscal office and leadership in the House, the Senate, and the governor, it'll be interesting to see what they come back with. I mean, they had a very expedited pathway for this bill when they introduced it. And as we say, you know, the time is not our friend right now. So it's going to be interesting to see how quickly they can find something that, you know, really brings everyone together and produces a solid tax cut for most South Carolinians.
Now, the problem is you have Republicans jumping off the ship of this pretty quickly. They're removing their names as sponsors of the bill. And this is a little bit of back and forth, right? Representative Brandon Newton said that, quote, it's all about fairness. We should have a simple tax system that is flat, fair, and everyone takes part in. We should not have a progressive income tax system where a group of the population is paying the entire tax while another is not. According to the article here in the AP, Jeffrey Collins writes, Democrats were still processing this proposal at the time of this publication, but were alarmed that initially taxes would be raised on 60% of the people in the state without a firm set time to bring them back down. Democratic Representative Gilda Cobb Hunter, who is not the House Minority Leader officially, I am real nervous about what we are going to find out later went into paying for this tax cut, she said. And here's an interesting line. This is Representative Cobb Hunter, quote, I'm troubled by this notion we've got to out-tax relief North Carolina and Georgia and all these other southern states. Well, can I encapsulate the Democratic Party's view of economics into a statement? I don't think we should willy-nilly be talking about providing tax relief given the uncertainty of the economy, she said. Wow. Well, I mean, I can just tell you that either greatly reducing the income tax or eliminating it altogether would give more money into the pockets of the consumers that will then go out and consume the goods. No matter, they would have more money to pay the higher prices should the prices be higher. South Carolina's Republican governor, House and Senate leadership all participated in that press conference on March 25th. The details were sparse, though, until late last week. The majority of taxpayers in 7 different income bands ranging from $10,000 to $150,000 would pay more, the average increase being somewhere between $300 and $800. Republican Governor Henry McMaster told reporters that he supports, quote, a broad, flat, simple to understand low tax. Everybody ought to pay something, a little something. It's my Henry. Welcome back to my Henry McMaster impression.
Yes, I caught that.
The problem here, it goes to this. We got bills, a House bill, House Bill 4176, that would introduce casino gambling into the I-95 corridor. So you're saying, why are you bringing this up? What's the tie that binds here? The tie that binds here is if you cut the income tax, you got to get that revenue from somewhere. Almost slipped in a some way. But I want to make this point that the General Assembly finds that casino gaming is not consistent with, nor compatible with, the labor, tourism, or economic industry profile for most communities in South Carolina. Well, what does that mean? I think that means it's not going to generate a lot of revenue. Let me be quite honest with you. And this is not, again, this would be private industry
right.
being given the green light by the government, not really the government running the casino. But I've heard from folks that said, you know, well, you can say that you're against gambling as a Christian. You can say that. And I don't, we've actually heard from people on social media who say, well, I'm a Christian. I think gambling's fine. And what's the difference? What's the difference between going and laying a couple dollars on the blackjack table or going to Target and buying a t-shirt? Well, I think there are intrinsic differences there, but
absolutely.
If we want to have the deeper conversation, I have numbers. Yes. Would you like some statistics, Mr. Page?
Yes, please.
South Carolina currently ranks 43rd in public safety.
Wow.
There are 50 states.
Yes, so we're 43rd out of 50. Okay.
We're in the bottom seven.
Yes, okay.
The increased cost for law enforcement and courts per pathological gambler, and by pathological gambler, we mean the gambling addict, is $1,156.
That's real American dollars.
That's real American dollars that will only increase as it currently sits. Social services cost about $507 per the same type of gambler. Objective increase of welfare recipients withdrawing money from casinos increases. Welfare recipients increase. Therefore, the government is paying more money into welfare services. And if I might just add, the highest contributors to deficits and or government spending are the welfare services, including but not limited to Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Gambling leads to higher rates of future unemployment. Now, why would you be future unemployed? Oh, because you go there instead of working.
Yes.
Casinos negatively affect home values. The National Association of Realtors says that casinos are an attractive nuisance. Nuisance on home values. The impacts are negative. The positive benefits are minimal, but the negative impacts are substantial. That's citing the economic impact of casinos on home prices, literature survey, and issue analyst. Now, the I-95 corridor, we have driven it.
Yes.
Plenty of times. And yes. I know the exact area this thing's going to, assuming, be built on.
Absolutely. And it seems like a lot of the infrastructure around this particular area has been upgraded lately.
It has. There's a great...
They're really not knowing why.
Well, I will tell you, the exit, the Walterboro exit on 95 has a lot there. There's a Starbucks. There's an Arby's. Of course, there's a Waffle House. These people aren't paying for this. There's a Five Guys. And then there's a great little local eatery there. It's a barbecue buffet. It's delicious. If you're driving down to the beaches in Georgia, it's a good kind of stopping point for lunch. They're not going to like this. Casinos take money away from local businesses.
Yes, they do. They're a one-stop shop.
Because this is not just a casino. It's going to be a...
Resort
destination.
Yes.
Casinos target lower income players. The higher income players don't care, right? You got money to burn, you got money to burn. And they're placing it in an area that's low income.
Yeah, very predatory. I mean, and then, you know, I've also read articles about, you know, how sex traffickers use casinos.
I haven't even gotten to that
kind of as a convenience place because, you know, you can actually... You know, bring in the sex trafficked individuals.
Yes.
Because you've got hotels there. And we all know what I-95 is. I mean, we've heard for years and years that I-95 is the number one corridor
yes.
for sex trafficking and drugs on the East Coast.
Yes.
So we're literally aiding and abetting crime.
Now, there's another bill, S-444, that would legalize sports betting in South Carolina. And it creates a wagering commission that will grant licenses to businesses who want to engage in sports betting. Now, it's a very convenient service, but extremely addictive. We have found studies show that online sports betting increases your rates of substance abuse, mental health crises, and suicides. If you yes. bet the money and you don't have the money, you don't think there's a way out.
Right.
That's serious. And it also increases individual bankruptcy claims because you run out of money and you can't pay your debts, and now you have to liquidate your debt and pay it in one lump sum.
Yeah, it's really sad, you know, to really read the literature and listen to some of those who have really become addicted, and you know, to see that it really goes after young men especially. And because, you know, their interest in sports and then just the immediacy of being able to bet on micro events.
I have an interest in sports.
And I think, you know, CBS Sunday Morning did a great story about a week and a half ago with Ted Koppel, where he's interviewing several guys who are addicted, and just really them talking about the addiction, and like if they didn't place a bet, they're getting, you know, a text or something saying, well, we're going to give you bonus bets, you know, to get you back in the game. Or they get texted if they're not, you know, active and saying, we miss you. And, you know, there was particularly a poignant story of one of the guys talking about how he literally was up to the point of committing suicide. And I would just encourage you to, you know, Google Ted Koppel online sports betting and watch that video. It's 11 minutes, but it's well worth your time.
If you would like to see that, you can subscribe to our mailing list, palmettofamily.org. That'll be sent out as part of our insider email this week.
Fantastic.
There are more of these, and we'll get to these another time. Just want to remind you that 72% of sports bettors are young men, and credit scores go down by 0.3% in states with any form of legalized sports betting. Bankruptcy rates go up 25 to 30% 3 to 4 years after it's legalized. Debt collections go up by 8%. Debt consolidation loans are directionally go up by 10% in these states. Auto loan delinquencies increase by 9% with any legalized betting, 5% with online betting. Usage of secured to unsecured credit increases by 4%, and credit card limits are reduced by 3% in states with online sports gaming. I don't think that these are the economic boondoggles that some, both in the legislature, private industry, and even in the news media would like you to believe.
I agree. And I mean, and it's interesting that, you know, again, we have a supermajority Republican House, a supermajority Republican Senate, and they literally have introduced a trifecta of gambling bills, whether it's on horse betting, whether it's on online sports betting, or whether it's casinos. Last I checked, and obviously we're a nonpartisan organization.
We are, but we do call spade spade.
But the Republican platform is pretty strongly against any form of gambling.
Yes, even though we're nonpartisan, I do have reading comprehension skills.
Yes.
Well, I think, and this is a broader topic that we can discuss in the summer, the move in the Republican Party to libertarianism as opposed to conservatism has been stark.
Yes.
And deep over the last, it's 2025, 9 years, 2015, 2016, post Tea Party.
Yes.
Is when you really see that move. South Carolina went to SCOTUS.
Yes, we did.
To defend the defunding of Planned Parenthood. This piece from Leah Savas that will also be a part of our insider email this week breaks down the hearing. The word abortion rarely came up last Wednesday. I know because I listened to the hearing. The arguments focused on whether a clause in the Medicaid Act gives Medicaid patients the right to sue if a state removes their chosen health care provider from the Medicaid program. To pro-lifers on the ground, the real question is whether Planned Parenthood is qualified to provide that health care in the first place. And full disclosure, that's the conversation I had with Leah when she called me after the hearing.
Fantastic.
Yes, if South Carolina as a state were to defund Lexington Medical Center and say Medicaid patients cannot get service at your hospital.
Correct.
I can confirm, or Prisma, I can confirm that those hospitals do provide services that are in line with best health practices, and they follow the Hippocratic Oath, and they do their job. One of those hospitals where my child was born, they offered excellent care to both my wife and my child, and to me, even though the chair was very uncomfortable. Yes. just is. My struggle was real.
Yes.
The issue here is that Planned Parenthood will claim that only 3% of their services are abortion. However, we understand that there are two reasons. I told Ms. Savas this. I said Planned Parenthood operates in two different categories now: abortion services and gender transition issues. They provide the hormones. Now, those two abortion is illegal in South Carolina after 6 weeks gestation, number one. Number two, gender transition protocols of any kind on those under the age of 18 or under the age of 26 who are on Medicaid is illegal. Those aren't best health practices as found by our state laws. Therefore, I don't think you're providing health services.
Correct.
Therefore, I don't think we should give you access to Medicaid funding.
Yes.
Done. Now, it was a great back and forth. I will tell you, I enjoyed the back and forth because I'm weird. A lot of the justices talked about rights creating language. Justice Brett Kavanaugh said, I'm not allergic to magic words because magic words, if they represent the principle, will provide the clarity that will avoid the litigation that is a huge waste of resources for states, courts, providers, beneficiaries, and Congress. Basically, we just need to pin the magic words here. I'm gonna cede a little bit of what Kavanaugh is saying here. We need to write down that Planned Parenthood can't receive Medicaid funds.
Yes.
So we don't have to deal with this anymore.
Absolutely.
In any state.
Correct.
Or federally. That's where we're at here. A lot of back and forth. It was a good one. Ketanji Brown Jackson continues to show that while she might be a very smart individual, when it comes to oral arguments, I just don't think she's a very good justice. The questions she asked are not great. The back and forth she has don't illuminate anything. They're just pablum at that point. The same with Justice Sotomayor. I do kind of have a fondness to Justice Elena Kagan, although I don't agree with her on nearly any decision she writes. I do find her questioning and probing to be more in line with how the conservative justices go. The argument from Planned Parenthood is they provide other things. I'm quoting. Prenatal care, STI testing, and pap smears, all of which accept Medicaid, and you can use Medicaid to pay for them. That's fine. If you want that to be your services, then stop the other stuff.
Absolutely.
Stop the other stuff.
Yes.
And you'll get the Medicaid funding.
Right. And there are plenty of other clinics and, you know, centers across the nation and across South Carolina,
right,
that provide those very same, things and also, qualify for Medicaid. So why would we as a state want to send taxpayer money to Planned Parenthood that deliberately aborts unborn children? That is just morally repugnant to me as a taxpayer.
Now, there were we as Palmetto Family issued a somewhat of a statement. I would argue it's not a statement. I would argue it was just thanking. Several of our leaders spoke at the Supreme Court last Wednesday during the debate or during the oral arguments. Many of them issued statements of support that day or the day before. And we thanked them. Governor Henry McMaster, Lieutenant Governor Pamela Ebbett, Attorney General Alan Wilson, Senator Lindsey Graham, Congresspeople, Joe Wilson, Sherry Biggs, William Timmons, Ralph Norman, Russell Fry. There are three names that aren't there.
Correct.
And there was a lot of conversation on social about this. I just want to put this out here. In our research, we don't just put things out willy-nilly. There was no statement issued by Representative Nancy Mace until after the argument.
Correct.
Of course, there was not a statement issued by James Clyburn.
Correct.
And I didn't see anything from Senator Tim Scott.
No, I didn't see anything either.
Okay, so there you go. That's why we did that. And that's why their names weren't on there. And that's why the names that were on there were on there. By the way, I know for a fact that Governor McMaster, Congresswoman Sherry Biggs, and Congressman Ralph Norman spoke at SCOTUS.
Yes, they did.
I know that for a fact because I have the pictures to prove it.
Yes.
And some of the videos. All right, that's what's happening in our state and nationally. Now, I used to do this quite often, and Mitch didn't like it. Have fun at the Masters this week, Mitch. I would spring things on him.
You're not bitter, are you?
No, not at all. He's the biggest Masters fan I think I know. And I know he's having a great time. He took his boys there. I saw it on social media, took his boys to Augusta. So his boys are 20 years younger than me at the minimum, and they've experienced something I have not yet. So congratulations to them. That's a cool event to be a part of, and I hope one day to not get the rejection letter. Okay, so all of this talk about President Trump and the tariffs and Elon Musk and the signal chats and all of these things going on would make you believe that the Republican Party is in disarray nationally. I disagree. As Scott Jennings on CNN, my new spirit animal, said the other day, who's more popular, President Trump or congressional Democrats? And the answer is President Trump. He's sitting at about 50 to 51% approval, and congressional Democrats are at 20.
Wow, 20, that's...
It's the same side of the issues they take when it's an 80-20 split. Okay, so who's the new leader of the Democratic Party? And by who's the new leader, I mean who is going to run for president in 2028. Now, there are some options. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, possible. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, possible. Kamala Harris, possible. Although the new expose showed that Barack Obama didn't even like her at all that much. It turns out a lot of the books show that he doesn't really like anybody. Governor Gavin Newsom did a podcast. He's got a podcast now, and he did an interview with Charlie Kirk, Turning Point USA.
Very interesting.
Moderation, right? He came out against transgender sports in some ways. But I don't think those are the leaders. Maybe it's Hakeem Jeffries.
Or Tim Walz.
Yeah, cheering on the failing of an American business, probably not going to be your best. It could be. Pete Buttigieg.
Could be.
Pete Buttigieg, he's going to be running for governor and or running for Senate in Michigan. You know how many days he's lived in Michigan?
How many?
Zero.
Zero. Okay.
But he's going to run. No, I think there are three leaders of the Democratic Party right now. The first one is Senator Bernie Sanders. You remember him. He ran for president in 2016.
He did, yes.
And 2020. And probably should have won both of those races to be the leader of the Democratic Party. But he's still the leader of the Democratic Party. He generates so much enthusiasm. Here he is outside of the U.S. Capitol just this week, rallying with union workers. Here's what that sounded like with Bernie Sanders. I'm just going to let you in on a little secret. When you say we are the unions, the next line is the mighty, mighty unions, not hooray. It doesn't instill a lot of confidence. I don't know. They're wayward. They can't find their way. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been doing a lot of fight the oligarchy tour stops with Bernie Sanders.
Yes, she has.
And I believe she's going to be your nominee in 2028. Mark it. I was right about Joe Biden not being the nominee in 24. I think I'm going to be right about this one too, AOC 2028. But who's the congressional leader?
Mark it down, April the 9th, 2025.
Year of our Lord, 2025. It's going to be AOC. Now, she's going to be the presidential nominee. I think there's a new person in the Congress, not even in the squad. Remember the squad?
The squad, yes.
Yeah. Well, Cori Bush, the Ringo Starr of the squad, is no longer in Congress. So they lost a little bit of their luster. And Rashida Tlaib is dealing with some issues when it comes to the war in Gaza. So, who is the next congressional Democratic leader? I think it's the congresswoman from Texas, Jasmine Crockett.
Jasmine Crockett.
She is on TV so much.
Yes.
And Senator John Kennedy had a good line last night about AOC. He said, I believe she's the reason why we have directions on shampoo bottles. But then he said, what's the strategy for her? We're employing Operation Let Her Speak. Yes. Operation Let Her Speak. Yes. And I think they should employ the same operation when it comes to Jasmine Crockett. Now, The Supreme Court just upheld President Trump's use of the Illegal Aliens Enemies Act.
Correct.
Of 1798.
Right.
Because old law is still good law, even though it's old. Just basic principle in a 5-4 decision. What's always the argument when it comes to illegal immigration and why we should have illegal immigration? It's because, quote, they'll do the jobs that we want. Yeah, well,
nobody else wants to do
them. Representative Jasmine Crockett was at a church in Texas. I'm old enough to remember when any Republican speaks at a church, it should be separation of church and state.
Right.
That's my side point. She was speaking at a church. Here is what Jasmine Crockett had to say about her stance on illegal immigration.
So I had to go around the country and educate people about what immigrants do for this country, or the fact that we are a country of immigrants.
Right.
The fact is, ain't none of y'all trying to go and farm right now. Okay, so I'm lying. Raise your hands. You're not. We done picking cotton. We are. You can't pay us enough to find a plantation.
I know that's right.
So, Operation Let Her Speak. Operation Let Her Speak and let her words speak for themselves. First of all, we're not a nation of immigrants, ma'am. This nation was not founded by immigrants. This nation was founded by settlers. Well, the land was founded by settlers. One would argue it's a mixture of settlers and immigrants. Beside the point, most people in the United States are no longer immigrants. They were born here, just like you were. And this idea, I'm going to let you in on a little secret, Congresswoman. The vast majority of American citizens, push come to shove, if I had to provide for my family, I would go dig holes.
Yes.
Like, if that's the only option I had, I would go dig holes. Because it's my job to provide, put food on the table, and to keep the lights on.
Yes.
Right. Then she transitions it to the cotton picking plantation bit, which is Operation Let Her Speak. Because that's just her argument there, or her statements there, are fraught with intellectual dishonesty. Truthfully, they are. I think she's the next congressional leader. Now, I don't mean like she's going to be the House minority or House majority leader. I think that's Akeem Jeffries. I think he's locked in. But is she the next AOC?
Could very well be.
Thought leader, yeah. Or lack of thought leader.
Yeah, I mean, she's firebrand. Definitely, you know, increased her profile more so, I think, than really anyone else at this
point. Couple of months, just since the Trump win in November, she's become that vocal leader. She's the political and ethnic minority from the state of Texas. Now, she did call the governor of Texas Hot Wheels. That's a problem.
It is.
That's a problem. Yep. So, but again, it's not always about doing the right thing. It's about getting the big line and the big moment. So I figured we'd just have some fun with that.
Sure.
I mean, this is something we're gonna have to keep tracking.
Yes, absolutely.
And honestly, we need to find out who's leading the Democratic Party in South Carolina, too, because we talked about at the top, this is how you wrap it all the way back. We talked about 2026. I listed off a lot of names.
They were all Republicans.
They're all Republicans. Who? Who? Who on the other side? That's just a... Does it matter? I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, based on the past 20 years, probably not much.
Correct.
And as it stands right now, South Carolina doesn't have a single statewide elected official that's a part of the Democratic Party. So I don't think that's going to change necessarily. We're at about a 60-40 state when it comes to presidential elections,
yes,
give or take. But nationally and statewide, Democrats have got to do a better job of finding who their leaders are, and being able to have those leaders connect to the electorate.
Right.
That's the big problem, because I don't believe Representative Crockett does that very well. I believe Bernie does that the best of any national Democrat.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really interesting, you know, because I know we have these discussions off air and you know, discussions with other people, just that the path the Democrats have chosen really has alienated so many voters, and that if they actually would come to the middle on some of these issues, they could actually be a formidable force both in South Carolina and nationally, but they're not going to.
If you take the 20 issue on every eight, the 20 side on every 80-20 issue,
yes.
If part of your party's intrinsic values is to annihilate children in the womb, mutilate children outside of the womb, and then over-sexualize the children in the schools, how do you win on that?
Yeah, and tell women they don't matter in sports.
Tell women they don't matter in sports, or at all. If you want me to be quite frank with you.
Sure.
How do you win on that? Yeah. How do you connect with the American people on that? Your only hope is that you have an economic downturn, and then you can promise candy and roses on the other side.
Right.
And then you end up with what happened from 2021 to 2024.
Correct.
And cowardice on the national, on the world stage. You've got to find out who your leaders are, people.
Yes.
You got to find out who your leaders are, and you got to hold your leaders accountable. Speaking of holding the leaders accountable, go to palmettoalliance.org. Click Take Action, and you can see the bills that we're tracking, and you can communicate with your representative or senator and let them know where you stand on these issues. If you want to learn more about Palmetto Family as well, go to palmettofamily.org. Sign up for our mailing list. If you want to hear more of this podcast, you can do that. Just scroll down. You'll see all of our episodes dating all the way back to August of 2021 on Spotify and Apple Podcast. We have a deep library, folks. Deep, deep, deep library of issues. Some of those are more timely, so it might not make sense in 2025, I guess. Like the governor's race in 2022 probably won't tickle your fancy anymore. Spoiler alert, Joe Cunningham didn't win. So I know, mind blown. Check that out though. Give us a 5-star rating and review. Let us know what you think. Share this show with your friends and family. We appreciate your support. We'll be back next week. More of the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state coming to you. It's the Palmetto Family Matters Show.